Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Always goes up in election year. People come out to volunteer. It took a big jump this year after the election, after Trump's election. Of course, we had a breakfast meeting last Thursday, that the largest attendance we've ever had at one of those, about 100 people.
Wow.
We didn't quite have standing room only. We did have chairs for everyone, but we did have people sitting on the stairs. We had people sitting on the stage. So we were at the capacity of the room, I believe.
We're always talking about the speakers at the door breakfast, but the food's quite good there. Mm-hmm. All this food that you can't eat the rest of the month.
Yeah.
You get your eggs, you get your bacon, you get your sausages, you get your fried potatoes, you get a nice batch of fruit. It's a good breakfast. It's a good venue, and the sound quality is really good there for older folks.
Well, Democrats of the Red Rocks, as a political organization, has been particularly effective here. And if you wonder, Sedona wasn't born blue, believe it or not. It was. It's certainly through the efforts of organizations like DOR, mostly DOR, Democrats of the Red Rocks, the permanent early voting list drive, getting people registered, getting people to vote, which is, and the support of candidates. And so, if nothing else, if the information is wonderful, the movies and that you used to do, and hopefully we'll do again, and the breakfasts are great. But
DOR's kind of, when I was there, was kind of an entrepreneurial organization. So when you had Pat Monahan, who wanted to do movies, and Bobby did movies. And so it's been a lot individuals deciding to take over a responsibility and do it. It's not a machine-like thing. It's a very different quality place. We want to talk about your focus this year. Donald Trump's been in office. Mike's not fond of the man.
I could have a mimosa with. This is not a beer drinking guy.
We could keep going on and on about him, but all right. What are you guys going to do about it? First, I guess, Karen, and then John and Mick. Going to take up particular areas. So you told me before the show you got three areas you want to focus on this year.
Yeah, we decided we've obviously got, besides Donald Trump, we have a Republican governor and a Republican legislature, and particularly three, to my mind, very crazy Republicans who represent our legislative district, all of whom are up for re-election in 2018. So we're also looking towards some focus on national issues that also have a local impact to get people out to think about the 2018 race for governor and for legislature.
So the rumor that the state representatives, one of them is term limited out, is not true?
She is term.
Okay.
One of them is term limited.
Okay.
So there will be one open rep seat there. So besides looking for people to obviously run in those areas, we thought that keeping people's ideas focused on issues that are both national and local would help. So we thought we would look at the science breakfast speakers, look at some evening programs this year as well. We're thinking some evening programs and some of the issues we'll be talking about. And again, what we do with movies, with other events, and partnering with other groups that are here in town. There's a lot of groups that sort of grew out of the Women's March, looking at various issues to try to continue to get out of that. The issues would be what would bring people interest on both local and national. So we were looking at those issues, decided that there's so many things we could cover, so many things we could talk about, that we would look at education, at environmental issues, and at immigration being three issues that really affect everybody, specifically locally, statewide, and nationally, and try to focus on the you know, the national issues and bring them down to how they affect our local level.
Be nice to get all the indivisible groups and small groups and the Women's March folks who we've met mm-hmm. with, and we're going to have a program with them in a few weeks, to get them together, at least coordinate, not join all the same thing or do the same thing, but at least so everybody knew what everybody else was up to.
And we've started that process on trying to get together with those. The people organize the Women's March, have a large mailing list. We've already read about cross-promoting each other's activities. You know, some of them are don't want to be as political in a partisan way. Some of those groups want to remain more open. But we've decided what we need to do is all publicize what each other is doing, since we are looking towards the same goal, which is
so what
change.
Topic should we start on? What's the most pressing right now? I know that they're all serious, education, environment, immigration. Somebody want to talking about immigration first, and then we'll talk about environment?
Sure, if you want. One of the things that's really important, I think, in an overlay on all of these areas is voter registration. And, you know, that's going to be arching over everything that we do indoor. And that implicates all of these topics, but in particular, immigration. Right now, we're changing as a state to a blue state, and part of that is the growing Hispanic population here and a lot of the concerns around immigration that have riled up not only the Hispanic community but all, you know, compassionate and thinking folks that want to deal with that area. And so what we really have to do, I think, is in particular in the Verde Valley, whether it's Sedona, Cottonwood, Camp Verde, those communities, is really reach out and be cognizant of the needs of the Hispanic community here. And I'm talking about both documented and undocumented folks here.
I'm going to ask you a hard question.
Okay, go for it.
We want to hear everything else you got to say about immigration. There's lots of it's a big topic, and that's a hot button issue. Is there an identifiable Hispanic community in Sedona and the Verde Valley? Is there a leader? Is there a group? Are they active? Is there a desire to be politically active?
Actually, I think it's a really diffuse group. I mean, I don't think we have really identifiable leaders out there pushing their agendas. So that's what I think folks in the Verde Valley have been pretty quiet.
There is a group, and we hope to have them on the air, that is working with immigrants. And it's not only people who are here that are undocumented. It's the fact that most people in the Hispanic Latino community have relatives or friends who are undocumented mm-hmm. or whose yeah. documentation is ambiguous. For instance, if you were brought here as a child, President Obama protected you from deportation. Mm-hmm. Now we hear that may or may not be happening. The Trump administration's statements and actions are very, very confusing at this point. Mm-hmm. But we're hearing that there's a massive new anti-immigrant movement. I know people who've gone to a recent meeting of immigrants that people in the immigrant community are very frightened now.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
They don't
right.
know what's happening. They're right. afraid of there are all these rumors of rounding up mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. We are in a situation where the unemployment is down to 4.8%. Restaurants and hotels are having trouble staffing themselves, right. and then we have people being frightened out. But what can DOOR do?
Well, I think what we can do is reach out to folks. I mean, right after our last DOOR breakfast, we had an emergency meeting because we were hearing these rumors, too, about ICE roundups in the community. But what was really interesting is when we looked into it, we found out that was not the fact. You know, that was not occurring. So what there is a lot of fear in the community. And now we have to decide, do we want to pay $12 for a grapefruit in a store if all 11 million are deported? You know, we have to look at how does this impact our economy. We have to look at the humanity, too, of deporting people who came over as children. The one thing in Trump's just recent, there were two executive orders on immigration. One was probably better known, that dealt with immigrants and from, you know, seven Muslim countries. But the other one probably has more local impact, which is a January 25th executive order. And it reoriented priorities for deportation. And that included, I've got it right here in front of me, it's a Section 5. It could be anybody ever convicted of a criminal offense. But not only that, anyone ever charged with a criminal offense. And then beyond that, anyone that may have committed a criminal offense, not even charged. So what does that mean? In local jurisdictions, it's some of the jurisdictions, even in the Verde Valley, have criminalized things as minor as dog at large.
So ICE has to notify the local police before they come into a community so they can coordinate things so there's not really bad mistakes that could happen.
I don't think they have to. It's just that's been
that's
the policy,
the
and that's the tradition, and that's good. And what I would suggest is that if we're going to be deporting nannies and dog-at-large folks and gardeners, you know, we better decide what is that going to do to community policing? What is that going to do in our communities when, you know, there is crime that is committed in the community? What about the victim of domestic violence? Is she going to call the police, you know?
Well, there was that case in Texas where the woman went in to report domestic violence, yeah, and they deported her.
Right. So, again, I don't think it makes our communities safer by putting people more underground. And that's probably true even in the international context now. We have this, you know, ban on seven Muslim countries of people coming in, people going out. It's been stayed right now. But again, there's no rationality. Doesn't this benefit mostly propagandists and among ISIS in terms of they want to create a clash of civilizations?
I think that one of the things that Mike said is that absolutely nobody's committed a terrorist crime from these particular countries that were banned.
Why are you looking at Iran of all countries? I mean, maybe you should look at Britain or France or Belgium, Saudi Arabia. It just goes to show it just doesn't make any sense to single out nations as opposed to individuals. And extreme vetting is, I mean, that's fine, but let's focus on individuals.
Well, it was a political move, and it had nothing to do with reality, had nothing to do with safety, had nothing to do with crime. It was all about politics.
It was supposed to be legal, though, right, Mike, as opposed to just banning all Muslims from coming here. This was supposed to be the legal workaround to ban Muslims but not say so.
I'm sitting next to a lawyer, and I believe that they will find a way. Trump, all of these things, so many of these things, would be in a genteel democratic republic as we have, which is based mostly on compromise. The kind of politics that we're having, and especially on immigration, because it's such an emotional issue for folks, will take a long time to shake out. Unfortunately, in immigration, there's lots and lots of people. When we have an immigration lawyer on, the stories will be heartbreaking and are already heartbreaking. Yeah. Have been heartbreaking. Under Obama, they were heartbreaking.
I know. I know that people are afraid.
Let's talk about education.
Before we do that, Mike, what's DOOR going to do about immigration? We have this huge problem. And we have this huge campaign issue. What's DOOR doing locally, or what can you guys do?
Well,
anybody?
We're talking about it now. What can we do? And I think first what we need to do is gather information. you know, locally and figure out exactly what's going on, not respond to rumor and innuendo. Well, respond by investigating and seeing what's going on. And then it's to communicate with and identify those leaders in the community here that we can expand our base and address their concerns. So I don't know. Is one of you guys want to comment?
The meeting we had last Thursday after we heard these rumors about people actually having been picked up in Sedona, then that they weren't true, we decided we sort of needed to find out what is available if that happens for reality to assist people, who some of whose family members may have deported, what charitable organizations, what legal organizations exist to provide that kind of help to people. So we decided to reach out to the local Catholic churches who we know have some charitable involvement, Vincent DePaul, reach out to find out what's going on that we might be able to assist. And if we, on the personal level, if it turns out that ICE does come through and sweeps up people, how can we help the family members that remain? How can we make sure people are directed to whatever legal services are available up here in this part of the state?
I think one of the things I heard from one of your members, and it's an excellent idea, the Steve Segner promotion, is to at least inform them of their rights. That don't talk to anyone, don't sign anything. All you are required to give is your name, and that at least don't hang yourself. You might be in bed. So that's the approach, I believe, now, at least from your political organization, some members of your organization anyway, and when it comes to immigration, at least inform them of their rights. Short of providing sanctuary, that's a whole nother discussion.
So let's turn to education. Mike always wants to talk about education. I give him a hard time about it, but Mike was a teacher for many, many years, both in high school and college. And if you give him choice of topics, it's either how he doesn't like Donald Trump or education.
Well, you know, there's education, then there's education in Arizona. You know what I mean? And and I'm not the expert here. Karen's the expert.
Karen's laughing.
She's on the front lines of this, and she, unlike me, I retreated to the Sundowner and other places like that years ago. But Karen's on the front lines of an incredibly underfunded, I don't know, how could, I don't, there's no way you can characterize Arizona education in one sentence, but Karen McClellan's going to take 15 minutes here and try to tell us what's going on with education in Arizona.
Before we do that, we want to thank El Portal.
We do.
They have absolutely wonderful breakfast.
They do.
And we have breakfast there quite often. And it's a pet-friendly inn. It's one of the first in the country. It's a luxury inn that's pet-friendly, and there's doggies walking around. And it's quite beautiful. It looks like it's 100 years old, but I think it's only about 20 years old.
Yeah. No.
So what El Portal wants to do is increase the conversation, the breadth of the conversation about politics in northern Arizona. So
I am as A-type and masculine as Tom Tabak, and
it is
cute as hell. It is one of the cutest places, and I don't use that word lightly.
Karen,
I think we've all know that Arizona's got a lot of challenges in education. We've looked at things for funding for years. During the recession, Arizona cut the largest amount out of its education budget of any of the states. There are others that did more in dollars just because they have bigger economies. We cut somewhere around about 40% out of K-12 education, over 50% in funding to higher education. And we have come nowhere back to anywhere near those levels.
Did the proposition, what was it, 1-2-3, did that help?
It helped a little bit, but 1-2-3 was just a settlement of a lawsuit. So what we got in those money was money we should have been paid in the past. So we're getting some of that money that we should have received between 2008 and 2013 paid back, but it doesn't help. We're still way low on the base. and we're still struggling through things. So we looked at some of the issues this year, and the issue that's come up both locally and even more nationally recently has been the issue of vouchers. We've all read about Betsy DeVos, who just got confirmed as Secretary of Education. She heads an organization that pushes strongly for vouchers for everybody across the country, and she'd like to have a national voucher program.
She's the new Secretary of Education. She has no experience teaching. She has no experience supervising anything. She or her children never, ever went to public school. When they interviewed her, she had no idea about educational issues. But she's the new person in charge.
But
so
how's
this going to affect Arizona education?
It'll affect it to some degree. That, of course, is the federal part of education, which is not the major part of Arizona's funding. It raises the issues of vouchers even to a bigger level. And vouchers in Arizona itself have been a big issue. And right now, the state of Arizona has four bills that have passed committees to do with expanding the voucher program to everyone.
So what can people do about it? Because what's going to happen with the vouchers, right, is it's kind of good. Look, our public education is one of the least funded in the United States here in Arizona. And these vouchers are just going to take money from public education, allow people to take the money and even spend it on homeschooling so they could just sort of collect the money and put it in their pocket. It's hard to believe this legislation, Karen. I mean,
it is. It's in theory. Everyone who's listened to this program has probably heard of ALEC, which is an organization of conservative businesses and conservative politicians.
American Legislative Exchange Council. We at least want to explain it.
They write model legislation that was the source of the immigration bills in Arizona, SB 1070, and it's the source of the voucher bills in Arizona, except that Arizona's has, being the Wild West, has gone beyond even what that organization asked. They created vouchers with essentially no academic accountability for what students learn and almost no financial oversight as to what happens with these vouchers. In the past, they've been limited to who could accept them. If the legislation now before the legislature passes, every student gradually, they add grades every year, will be able to use this voucher, which is around about $5,000. It depends on the age of the student.
We had a guest from an LD supervisor from Phoenix area somewhere, and she talked about the money that is when you have Bill Gates recommending investment in charter schools, as and charters of course are private schools with public money. And there's lots of ways you can characterize charter schools, and Arizona is on the leadership on this area. We've had charter schools deeper and longer, and in some cases better and worse than other states. But and I'm doing this, this is completely off the cuff. As a former K-12 employee, I understand, and I just got this, they are making less than when I left 13, 14 years ago. Number one, I can't, and that's hard for me to believe.
And you left with an actual pension, right?
I left with zillions. I mean, I left.
You are a rich guy.
I am living high on my Arizona teacher's pension. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen. But the idea is, we're ready to try anything.
When we go out to eat, Mike always buys because of that pension.
I've listened to you. We go to Burger King a lot. I've listened to Democrats and Facebook rally against Betty DeVos, and yet she got confirmed anyway.
Well, everyone, obviously, on the national level, the Republicans have a majority in the Senate, passed things, only need 51 votes, and she got confirmed 50-50 with the vice president casting
Arizona
a tie vote. That's the lowest amount of votes that anyone has ever been confirmed and is now sitting in the cabinet under any president.
Including school boards, including administrators, and including staff. Arizona must have the most docile staff of any state or country in the world. How can this be happening? Where's the Arizona School Board Administration? Where's the AEA? Where's the organizations that supposedly represent education and yet have let you talk? You sat there and the first things out of your mouth, they cut 50%, they cut 40%. They've devastated education, period. In this state, it's over. I mean, I've been saying it's over for a long time, but it really is over.
All of those organizations you mentioned all actually have even, every one of those groups has full-time lobbyists that are down there, but we don't have a Democratic governor. We don't have a Democratic majority in either of the houses, and that's another story as to why the Republicans that get elected in Arizona don't even represent their own Republican constituencies.
Well, I tell you what I said.
Sometimes we elect extreme people who don't represent.
So how do you deal with that?
And that's true. That's the most important thing. Our representatives don't represent us, especially in education.
Yeah. Some years we
because they lie.
Yeah. Well, our voucher bills are nothing new. And they've gotten to this point a number of times in the past and have not gotten through completely. On each of these bills, a couple of Republicans voted no, not enough to kill them in committee. But there are a number of Republicans, as well as all the Democrats, who believe in public education. It's just a matter of hoping that they convince some of their fellow Republicans to vote that way. The voucher bills have a number of really negative issues. In the past, the people pushing vouchers, like the American Federation for Children, which is Betsy DeVos's organization, have said parents deserve a choice. Parents should be able to choose what kind of school their children attend, where they attend it, or homeschool them. And it's always been, here's an option for you and here's a choice. This year, for the first time, one of these bills includes an actual financial incentive to encourage you to take your child out of a public school. One of these bills, if it passes, your voucher would be approximately $5,000. It would allow you to save $2,000 a year out of that $5,000, put it into what they call a 529 account, which is a tax-sheltered college savings account. So you could be encouraged to pull your child out of public school. You get $2,000 a year for their college education. Why wouldn't you do it if you had a school nearby you could send your child to?
I asked Mick a hard question. It's only fair that I asked the woman a hard question. What's the magic number when it comes to per student? You just said $5,000, and it's about what it was. Actually, it's more like six or seven. Years ago when I was in K-12 education, and you hear places like Michigan with 15,000, places like New York and Massachusetts, where people come out of high school ready for college, at 12, 15, 18,000 per student. So what's the magic number, Karen? What would you like to have? What does it take to run your
We would love to have the 10 to 15,000.
Okay.
The Arizona used to be, back in the 1980s, around the middle of school funding. And to get us back up there right now, you're talking $3,000 or $4,000 more a student. I don't know exactly what the middle is at the moment, to put us right back in the middle. When they test things, Arizona scores closer to the middle on achievement when they try to measure test scores. We have great teachers, because we, as Mike can probably testify, people don't go into teaching to make $1 million. So teachers tend to put up with an awful lot of negative things surrounding them and still want to be in the classroom and try to forget that and teach the
students.
Well,
then I'll give you the
vocation sort of idea, which is the only reason we survive is because of the dedication of teachers who are willing to put up with low salaries and years of no raises.
You're trying to make me nice. I'm not going to get nice.
Yeah.
I had this conversation.
He's actually never nice.
With a teacher the other day, and I almost got killed, by the way. I said, you keep thinking that you're a professional. You're not. You're labor. And the sooner you start acting like labor, the better off you're going to be. Now, you have to ride herd on a staff, and it's not easy to have what I consider maybe 50, 100 really creative people and try to get them all going in the same direction. That's what school administrators have to do. That's what school members have to, school board members have to do. It's not easy. But in order for them to advance their position, they need to behave, and you need to treat them and support them like labor.
So what can DOOR do? What are you guys doing? What is DOOR doing to try to support education?
Yeah, on the immediate issue, on like this one issue on vouchers in Arizona, empowerment savings accounts, is we're hosting a town hall meeting on March 2nd at the Cottonwood Recreation Center at 5:30. We've got a panel of speakers from the Arizona PTA. Dr. David Garcia, who ran for state superintendent of public instruction in 2014, who's running again in 2018. Representatives, as Mike's, from both of the teachers' unions in Arizona, though Arizona being a right-to-work state, they don't have a whole lot of power, but just to speak about these issues, what people can do. The immediate thing is to try to mobilize people, to try to convince our Republican legislators that the majority of Arizona wants them to vote no on these specific bills.
What,
and, yes, just to keep
what
that.
What can an individual, Karen, who cares about education, do? Should they call? Should they go down and talk to their representative? What can they do to try to protect education in Arizona as an individual as well as a group?
Anyone who can go down personally to Phoenix, call ahead. You can find everyone's, have all the legislators' addresses and their phone numbers on the Arizona legislature's website, azledge.gov. It's called, make an appointment if you're down in Phoenix. Pick a name at random at this point because they're all going to have to
give
vote.
Give them a chance to lie to your face, absolutely, rather than through the press.
Some of them. But the more people, some people do respond. You know, you all know there are some legislators who will respond if it seems to be overwhelming public pressure. There were meetings at the legislature today. I know there's some rallies. There's some things going on since today is a holiday. And school's not in session, so there are some organizations holding some rallies at the Capitol today.
That's true.
There are other things. The main thing is pick up the phone and call them. Tell the secretary if you don't get through to the representatives. We do calling everyone. Please vote no on these bills. Send them an email. It's easy enough to find all of that. It's, you know, so like I said, not every politician ignores his
You're
constituents
right.
completely. Some will. And it only takes a few. We've got 13 Democrats, 17 Republicans in the Arizona Senate. It only takes 3 or 4 Republicans to vote no, and these bills all die.
And this is true of environmental education. I mean, environmental issues too, right, John? I mean, you can do all the kind of calling, all the kind of contact that Karen's talking about if you're concerned about environmental issues.
Well, in terms of the environment, particularly at the local level, we obviously have confirmed, they have confirmed a very anti, I think, climate change, environmentally concerned individual into the new cabinet. But basically, the biggest thing we need to think about in the Verde Valley and relative to the, in my opinion, that is, relative to the citizens that live here, is the question of water and the temperature and climate changes that are taking place. The issue is basically going back to the discussions in the Old West. There's a saying that says basically whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. And Arizona is a water-deficient state. And our legislature basically has, if any, a minimal amount of understanding or maybe even clueless as to the whole topic of what we need to do to address it. Basically, we have a huge area of the state that is totally drinking water from Colorado, which is inadequately allocated to the state compared to the compact signed in 1922, which allocated water to the three southern states, coming largely out of Colorado and Wyoming and Utah. That water is short of supply, And Phoenix drinks and Maricopa County drinks up the lion's share of all the water, along with agriculture. The Verde Valley has basically an aquifer-based system of water delivery. The water that's in the ground is what we're pumping out to drink and use and irrigate. And basically, there's no water management system in place. And the legislature doesn't really ever think much about this in terms of the process.
But when you talk about drink, I have a well. I'm on a well. I don't want you coming after my well until you go after the big users. Go after Intel. Go after the agricultural users. The water that I'm drinking and that I'm watering my fruit trees with on my bubblers is not the water that's causing the problems in Arizona, is it?
No, it clearly isn't. In most states, and California is the best example, they're getting more water than they can handle right now. But about 80%, 70 to 80%, it depends on the state, of the water used goes to agriculture. And agriculture, in general, certain states lead the way comparatively to others, but in agriculture, there has been minimal amounts of attempts to try and allocate water more efficiently to the plants that they grow, which we think we all...
A huge amount of our water is raising things like alfalfa that
absolutely
shouldn't even be raised in Arizona, I don't think.
Alfalfa, cotton, rice. There are several of these kinds of things.
We're raising rice in Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, yes. Now, they call it dry rice raising versus the total flood approach in Asia. But the issue basically is that the further down as we drain the aquifers here, it's only replenished by one component. It's only replenished by what we get from the skies through the seepage down into the ground or whatever. And people say, well, the Oak Creek is, for example, fed by springs. Well, the springs are all coming out of the aquifer. And if the aquifer gets drained and driven down to the point where we have to drive wells deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, or the water flow stops, we encounter a problem in terms of being able to deliver it to you. You may have to, at some point in time, sink your well another 50 or 100 feet to even get the water you got right now.
Well, that's the quick story. My well's 300 feet deep, and the time I've owned it, the water is coming from 100 foot less than it came from when I put the well in.
The real old timers are complaining about their wells.
I'm down at 240 on a 300 foot well, and I was at 140.
So, John, a lot of the important thing is to get an education, like you're talking about, a broad sense of we just can't go using water. We have to think about how we use it. Is DOOR thinking of an educational program on this?
Well, my personal feelings are is there's three things we should do. One is we got to start to create some education, and particularly with the leadership components, you know, the legislature, I don't know if they lead or not, really, but the leadership components of trying to get them to understand some of these issues more clearly. Find a few champions that are really going to start to take this up. Second of all, what we need to do is to create some awareness at the local community, which I think we can do through the city councils, through the county, and other things about this issue. I mean, there's three or four organizations that really work heavily in this area now. I have a bumper sticker on my vehicle, in fact, supporting the Verde River, one of the things about working in that capacity. Thirdly, I think what we need to do is to hold some education components about what we need to do, how we need to do it. And those are all local-driven issues. We could be a very affected local issue. The last thing we need to think about in this context is the claim on our water. I don't think very many people realize that the claim on both the Verde River water and the Salt River, the priority claim is Phoenix.
Yes, without a doubt. They designed it that way. There isn't a water meeting in the Verde Valley that the Salt River Project doesn't attend.
Don't they claim they own the water, Mike?
Or? Well, surface water, and that's the that's the big fight.
Yes,
the big water fight in Arizona is the connection of surface and groundwater, which is a whole show. 45 minutes seems like a long time. What strikes me about today is what we have. We're talking about political divisions in Arizona, and I always make jokes about angry libertarians, that the prevalent political, there's Democrats, Republicans, forget that. What we have mostly in Arizona is angry libertarians, and they vote either Democrat or Republican because we've only got two flavors to choose from. I have a lot of sympathy for angry libertarians these days. I think I'm becoming one. But the theme of the show is trying.
Your resignation will be taken.
Yeah. Is trying to get our representatives to do what the people that voted them in office want them to do. Doesn't this seem a little crazy? The people sitting around here. Doesn't it seem all we're talking about is we want them to support education and they don't. We want them to support the environment and they don't. I mean, how did they get elected? And we know, well, because they lied. So that if there's a theme and among Democratic perspective shows in general, it's simply trying to get people to vote and trying to get our representatives to represent us.
On the issue that John was talking about on the water, at least in this issue, we just elected Tom O'Halloran to Congress from our congressional district, and he has his whole career in politics has gone around the issue of water. He knows a lot about water in Arizona, a lot about water in the Colorado Plateau. So hopefully if we do an education forum, we're hoping to have him come and be a keynote speaker on the issue talking about the Colorado Plateau, the Verde River, you know, Arizona water in our immediate area. We did in that case, you know, he did a lot, tried to do a lot when he was in the legislature. He didn't succeed on some of the issues.
So in the few minutes...
We do have one good person elected there.
In the few minutes
Tom,
we have left... What's the most important things Dorr can do this next year? What are your most important tactics? Let's start with Karen, and we'll just move left to right.
It sort of goes on educating people on the issues, keeping the anger, the enthusiasm, the desire to go out and do something to hold that through to 2018. So the people who today are upset and angry will go out and vote in 2018 and change Arizona.
John and Nick each have 1 minute to address their issues.
I think the one of the questions is that build the constituency up. Find as many more members as we can because this is a key year coming up in the 2019 election year, whatever.
18,
whatever year it is. And get people in there so that we have more voices, more people, more push.
I guess I agree with John. All these substantive areas are super important with education, environment, immigration, but the overriding thing I think right now is how do we harness that energy? There were 1,500 people that marched at the Women's Day March. How do we harness that energy, the disparate groups together, and actually translate that into action?
You have more Dorr meetings you want to tell us about coming right up?
We do have the town hall coming up on March 2nd. We also have a breakfast on March 16th, which is going to be about the National Democratic Party with our local member of the National Democratic Party, Doug Ballard from Flagstaff. We'll have another breakfast in April, which will also feature Dr. David Garcia, who, as I said, is running for superintendent of public instruction. He'll talk about education on other issues and more general issues in Arizona on equity.
So if you're looking for a way to get politically active, I mean, like as Donald Trump may have done one service, and that is at least made people angry and have a desire to be politically active. Democrats of the Red Rocks, go to the website. They have a membership page. You have the Women's March of Sedona is really gained a lot of members. League of Women Voters, as always, is recruiting nice nonpartisan that Dorr works often with. Folks, on VBID.org. You can find this podcast and all our podcasts. Thank you for listening. Democratic Perspective at VBID.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.